Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 101. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com. I'm joined once again. He's sitting in for David Todd, as he has been quite a bit this offseason. Alex Cazora. Alex, happy tax day.
Yeah, don't remind me. I know it's a happy day for most people, but for us bloggers, it's a day of it's a somber day.
You know, I can't remember. I think I was much younger than you the last time I actually got money back from the government. So it's good to see another young person have to go through what I did. But, you know, some will say it's a good sign. It means you're making some money.
Right.
But all it means is you're not paying your taxes on time.
Living off that government cheese in a van down by the
river. Living in a van down by the river. No, in all seriousness, though, happy Friday to everybody. The NFL schedule was, of course, released Thursday night. We are, of course, obligated to talking about such an event. Alex, what is it about adding dates and times to teams that we already have known since the 2015 season ended that the Steelers would be playing? What makes it such a magical moment?
It's just the machine of the NFL. I mean, the NFL has the power to make an announcement of when the announcement of when they're going to announce the schedule is going to be. I mean, you can't do that with many other places in this world. It just kind of really puts, you know, a concrete list of the NFL season and kind of gets people going again after the layoff the last couple months. I mean, I'm not crazy about it. You know, I don't get too intense over it. I like to look at it and examine it from a couple different angles, but you know, it's a fun thing for people to do the win-loss prediction. They were doing it on ESPN last night. That's not my cup of tea, as you well know, but I know it's a lot of fun for fans.
Yeah, and make sure you start counting down the days until I make you and Matthew and everybody do that again.
I know you will.
It's a useless exercise, much like mock drafts, I guess.
Yeah, true.
But I don't know. It's something that a good portion of every fan base really like. Look, I mean, if they weren't making money off of somehow being able to do this in a 2 to 3 hour off season special, if they weren't making money, they're not going to do it. So,
but I mean, I don't even know why they, because this stuff gets leaked. I mean, the Steelers schedule, we had it out before, you know, the Steelers official site or ESPN's broadcast even started. Like, we're in a world where that information is just going to come out before you even get into it.
And it just isn't leaked unpurposely, right?
Yeah, no, I found it. It was one of our readers, Heather, had posted a link on NFL.com that I guess got the schedule up a couple seconds early. We were looking at Steelers.com to see if they'd slip up a little bit. It's not like it's an intentional thing, but, you know, they just have to get it ready to go, and you're able to kind of find a couple links that you know, give you that information.
But I think some of this stuff leaks out kind of on purpose. I mean, well, look, you get this many humans involved anyway. Humans are horrible at keeping secrets.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody tells somebody, tells somebody, tells somebody, and before you know it, you know, 100 games are out there on Twitter in some form or fashion, of all the teams, it seems like. It happens every year. Then, of course, you had the cutaway on the NFL Network where they showed the screen of the Patriots schedule. So we knew, you know, probably 30 minutes ahead of time that the Steelers would be playing the Patriots in Week 6. We knew several hours beforehand that the Steelers, or what I shouldn't say we knew, we thought the supposed leak was that the Steelers would play on the road first Monday night of the season against the Washington Redskins. That wound up being true as well, too. All right, well, let's go through this thing, and no, I'm not going to make you predict win or loss. I'll say that I'll give you several months before you have to do that for the site. But I mean, there are a few things to talk about as far as dates and times and when these games are scheduled. First and foremost, I was a bit surprised that the league wanted the Steelers to open up on the road on a Monday night against the Washington Redskins. Yes, I know Kirk Cousins and the Redskins made the playoffs last year, but really, how much storyline can you really build on top of that? To me, it's a five-star matchup because the Steelers are in it, right?
Yeah, that's the Tomlin line. I don't it's fine. I mean, it's two high-profile teams, Washington and Pittsburgh, but you're right. I don't know what the compelling reason was. I think the big takeaway, just largely that I look at from the schedule, Dave, is just there's a lot of short weeks for Pittsburgh. I mean, you start week one, you're playing Monday Night Football, then you got to go week two on a Sunday against Cincinnati, who's going to have a full week of rest. And for the Steelers, you don't even get that long week coming into the Monday night game because it's the start of the season. So you play on Sunday, Monday, it doesn't really matter. So you don't get the benefit and you get the downside of playing on a short week against a great AFC North opponent.
That, talking about they play Thanksgiving, they play Christmas, they play New Year's, that didn't make James Harrison too happy, did it?
No, and he took to Instagram, and I'm sure it was maybe a little bit tongue-in-cheek, talking about, your retirement sounds a lot better when you have to play on three holidays, but the reason why I wrote about it and the reason why I think you have to take notice to it is because we know how important James Harrison's kids are to his football decisions. He's talked about it in the past. Earlier this year, he said that one of his kids wanted him to play, and one of them wanted him to retire and stay at home. And he said if both his kids would have wanted him to retire, he would have done so, and he wouldn't be training at the Danny Center right now, and this wouldn't even be a conversation. So, knowing how important that is to him and to his family, that's why I think you have to take note and take some stock into it. If there is any upside to the holidays, is that two of them, I think it's Christmas and New Year's, are both home games, while Thanksgiving is on the road at Indianapolis. So at least it can be Christmas and New Year's in Pittsburgh.
I think, too, when you're talking about a player like James Harrison, not considering his age and kind of how regimented he is, probably in between games, of how he goes from right after a game to attempting to get his body back ready for the next game is probably quite an undertaking. And if you remove one or two of those days out of there, it's going to have some sort of effect, one would think. And remember last year he missed one game, and wasn't that prior to the bye? The game prior to the bye week?
I don't remember off the top of my head. That sounds right, though.
I think so. It would, I guess what I'm getting at is, just because of his age anyway, if every game would have been, 1 o'clock Sunday, I still would have bet that James Harrison would miss at least one game. And I'm willing to bet you see that this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point, because let's face it, he's not a spring chicken. A lot goes into it. I believe that knee's probably still balky to some degree, and just a wear and tear on him. So I understand him being upset. No, I don't think it's going. I think it was more kind of him just being pissed off more than anything and venting on Instagram. But do people really do things on Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's?
I know that might be a foreign concept, Dave, but yeah, I think he actually does have a Thanksgiving dinner.
It is what it is. I don't think it should be viewed as the Steelers being punished in any way, shape, or form. Heck, you could look at it, in the week two game against the Cincinnati Bengals at home in Pittsburgh as the Bengals being punished if you really wanted to. Everybody already knows that Fontez Burfict is scheduled to miss the first three games of the season. you could view it as, well, not only are they going to be without him, but now they have to play the Steelers without his services. There's so many intricacies that go into making a schedule with dates and times and trying to accommodate, you know, all 32 teams and schedules, local schedules in all these cities. I'm not, you know, I guess what I'm saying is I'm not ready to put the tinfoil hat on. However, comma, it's kind of justified, I think, right?
No, I actually think that, you know, I guess you can call it me putting the tinfoil hat on, but I think it was a deliberate effort to get them to play at least one game without Perfect, because, you know, the NFL, you know, as much as fodder and a story that you get out of Perfect being back, it's really a bad look for the league whenever you get these storylines of, you know, these Twitter wars and these off-the-field actions and personal fouls that the league's, you know, trying to take steps to cut down upon. So, no, I absolutely 100% of my heart believe that, you know, the league intentionally did this to get one game without Perfect.
Oh Lord, they got you.
I said that for a while. You know, you don't want to put that in a, you know, week four matchup, first game Perfect's back. You know, it's just, you know, if something terrible happens, it's a bad look for the reputation of the league, which doesn't have necessarily a sterling reputation all the time anyway.
So way back several months ago, they said, "All right, guys, it's time to build the schedule, but we got to start here."
Well, it's just if you look at the Steelers,
we got to start with the Bengals, the Steelers.
Yeah, I honestly think it had a role because it's become such craziness. I mean, you know, you don't want to see that stuff.
Now look, there would be conspiracy theories had this thing worked out wherever they put it on the schedule, right? Had they put it where they put it, they're going to get people talking about it. Had they put it week four after Perfect's suspension's up, Steelers Nation is crying foul that it's a conspiracy. Had they put it wherever, people are going to say, well, they did that because they don't want Perfect to miss a game. So I guess it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't conversation, right?
I guess, but no, I mean, I really think they did do that because of that.
Well, and the flip side though, people could say, well, okay, sure, the Bengals won't have Vontaze Burfict, but the Steelers going to go in and on a short week.
Yeah, well, you had to go on a short week against somebody, I guess. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's the big takeaway I get from this schedule is that you get two short weeks and a bunch of holidays. And that stuff, you know, you get the Monday nighter, you know, week two, and then if you look later in the year to play on Thanksgiving, you got a 4-day turnaround, so you're going to be at Cleveland on November 20th for Sunday afternoon, and then you're going to play, you know, Thursday night at Indianapolis. So that's two road games in a row, 4-day span, Thanksgiving. That's tough.
This is a schedule the media, probably the Pittsburgh media specifically, kind of cringed, right?
Not really deadline friendly, not at all. Though travel is light, so that's one good thing.
Yeah, travel's light, but there's what, only three home games with a 1 p.m. start? Is that correct?
I believe so. I know there's seven overall, you know, Sunday afternoon kickoffs or Sunday 1 p.m. There's three, you know, late night primetime games, and I believe it's five, my math is right, five 4:25, 4:30 games.
Probably no such thing as a blogger friendly, non-friendly schedule. But you know, I was kind of looking forward to. Of course, I'll be out in Vegas this year, and that of course is West Coast time. I was actually getting looking forward to watching 10 a.m. kickoffs.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a weird adjustment, though. I mean, you're probably not going to have to do it a lot, but it's actually four primetime games, not three.
And let's see, you got the Bengals at home as a 1 p.m. start. You have the Jets at home as a Sunday 1 p.m. start. And I think the only other one at home that's a 1 p.m. start is the season finale against the Browns, right?
Mm-hmm. And only once do we get back-to-back Sunday afternoon, you know, 1 p.m. starts week five and week six, hosting the Jets and then at Miami.
So we'll be doing a lot of late blogging this year, right?
Yeah, and that also means the All-22 comes out a little bit later, which is not fun for me.
Yeah, and hopefully, I mean, they've got to get that. They were better this year about it, though.
Yeah, they were, but you know, they just go. They always start top to bottom, and so if you're a later game, or if you're a you know Sunday night, or especially a Monday night game, you kind of get the short end of the stick.
Anything else stick out to you? You know, look, bye weeks, I would much rather them have maybe a little bit later bye week, I think, but it's nice of them to sandwich it in between the Patriots and the Ravens games, right?
Yeah, no, you know, it's basically down the middle, so you kind of break it up into two mini seasons. So, you know, I don't like my bye weeks to be really early. I'm not a huge fan of them being super late either, though I'd rather have it late than I'd rather have an early bye week. I'm cool with it being right in the middle.
Do you like the fact, and I think this you know, I haven't looked around, but I'm willing to bet a lot of divisions are having to do this. The Steelers close out the season at the Bengals, at home against the Ravens, and at home against the Browns. Do you like divisional games being stacked like that at the end of the
I
season?
mean, it's fun from our perspective because it's going to be such high-profile games. You're going to have a lot of playoff implications, I'm sure, because you know that AFC North race, however it folds, is going to be really, really tight, especially whenever you have all these teams going against each other. But for the players, I mean, you know, you get geeked up about it in one way, but whenever you're in the moment with how intense and emotional these games are, they drain you, Dave. And so to go through that slate of Cincinnati, Baltimore, Cleveland, that takes a lot out of you. So even if we assume Pittsburgh gets in the playoffs, they're going to be coming off you know, a pretty, you know, draining experience. So I mean, it's fun, but you know, it's a really, really intense and draining, you know, 3 week stretch.
Baltimore closes out their season with at New England, at home against the Eagles, at Pittsburgh, and at the Bengals.
Oof, that's not fun either. Yeah, so I guess they're all in the same boat. But how about just the December schedule? It's a cold one, Dave. They're going to be at New York. They're going to be or hosting New York, excuse me, the Giants on December 4th. They're going to go to at Buffalo for the 11th, at Cincinnati for the 18th, and then hosting Baltimore, then hosting Cleveland. So they're going to be just around Lake Erie, basically, you know, close to it, in cold, open December weather for the whole month.
My mom's basement has heat.
Yeah, I'm gonna have my space heater with my best friend. It's getting a cold one.
Have we beat this well-known horse up well enough in your eyes? Is there anything else that sticks out to you?
Yeah, no, I think that's about it. You know, I know eventually, like you said, months from now, we'll do win loss as begrudgingly as and it's just because teams change so much, and you know, there's always, you know, five teams that become really good every year and five teams that struggle from the year before. So it's so impossible to predict, and the draft's not even here, and you know, everyone's doing their prediction, and you know, it's going to change so much. I don't even find worth trying to break down. Oh, well, the Steelers, they're going to win week, you know, 10 against the Cowboys. That looks like a winnable game. I have no idea what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone week 10, you know, November 13th.
The thing is, just so you know, you see it year in, year out. You think a set of group of games is going to go this way, then your quarterback misses three games, or your running back misses the rest of the season, or your left tackle. Yeah, it's so many things. I understand why people do it. I know why look, it's fodder. It creates discussion. It creates hits on our website. That's why we do it. I don't particularly look forward to it. I'm going to go out on a limb here right now and let everybody know that I'm leaning towards the Steelers going 10-6 this season.
Oh my goodness, that is the biggest cop out for any Steeler fans ever. I mean, that is just the ultimate. Yeah, it'll be okay. So, you know, I don't want to go too crazy either way.
Hey, I've been fairly close.
Yeah, no, you have. That is the ultimate, like, fence riding, you know, like down the middle, be a politician kind of stance.
Amen, amen. But with all reality, I mean, that's the way it seems to be to work out every year. One other thing to kind of talk about, the Thursday night Thanksgiving game at Indianapolis will, of course, feature the Color Rush uniforms. Probably not going to be much color involved when it comes to the Steelers because, according to Art Rooney II, the Steelers will wear either all black or all white. Me being kind of an old school, growing up in the early 70s, I kind of would like to see the all white. But I think most people out there, most younger fans specifically, would like to see all black. What would you rather see?
Well, I guess I'm part of the stereotype because I kind of like the all black. I saw the helmets. I saw the post that you did in the video that Le'Veon Bell had tweeted out a little while ago, and it's actually the first time that I had seen it. And I saw those black helmets with the yellow face mask, and I really like that. That looks sharp. I'm not crazy about the color rush game. You know, it's another way for the NFL to sell jerseys. That's the whole motive behind it. I don't really care what they wear as long as they win. But you know, they look kind of sharp. I'll give them that.
That dull black helmet that I posted there in the Le'Veon Bell video, that's sharp.
Yeah, what do they call that? A matte? Is that a matte black? Is that what the word is?
I guess I don't know. I would have to. My wife's into all that. I could probably ask her if that's a matte black or a flat black or what. I never knew there were so many shades of black.
Yeah.
Evidently, there's 50 Shades of Gray, though. Did you know
oh,
that?
Oh, look at you being all cultured and referenced. Wow, I'm surprised. You know the reference.
I didn't see any. I caught bits and pieces of that movie on HBO, and I didn't see anything referencing color in it. However, I would like to see the all white. I kind of posted in that post one of these old Getty Images photos of a 1970, I believe it was a 1971 Steelers team in all white. I just kind of find that sharp. Now, of course, my feelings wouldn't be hurt to see all black. I just wonder if they did do all black, if they would trim it with white, or if they trim it with that bright yellow that you know that's on that face or on the face mask on those flat black helmets. But regardless, they'll only have to do that once this year. I'm assuming the throwbacks. It seems like I remember the throwbacks have one more season left as well, too, or at least one more season. So I'm assuming that we will see the Bumblebee uniforms one more time this year. You know what? They ought to just say the heck with the NFL and just show up in Indianapolis with our Bumblebee uniforms.
I don't think the NFL would be too happy about that. I wonder, though, what is the punishment if you don't wear the correct uniform? Do they not let you take the field, or how does that work?
Too much money involved not to let you take the field. But I would imagine that if you had the gojones to do such a thing, that it would be quite an expensive, fine or whatever.
Yeah, a stern
involved.
Talking to by Roger Goodell.
Yeah, a beating and a talking to, as I like to say. I have a feeling, and judging by the responses in this post, most people are going to want to go all black here. But I think Art Rooney kind of laid it out the best. You know, I think he's kind of leaning. What would you like to see the Colts wear? All blue or all white?
It depends on, I guess, what the all blue is. You know, you think of the Chargers powder blues, and those are really pretty jerseys. Maybe the Chargers or the Colts would go a more darker shade of blue.
That's gonna make for some TV blue right there, right?
Yeah. Just the color correction on your TVs could look a little weird. So I think I heard that Indy's more likely to wear the all whites though, so that would get Steelers to wear the all blacks.
Interesting. I think Rooney. Well, Rooney doesn't know right now. He says they haven't let him know yet. So. I don't know. Maybe a big selection of the fan base will get the wish, and it'll end up being Steelers wearing mostly all black. We'll see.
You gonna buy the Color Rush jersey, Dave?
Hey, yeah, you know that, right?
Do you have any Steelers jerseys? I'm just curious.
Not anymore that fit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the last jersey that you bought? Who was the player?
Greg Lloyd.
Oh wow! So we're going a little ways. Okay. All right.
Cool. Yeah. Alex, literally, I wear the same thing over and over again, depending on the season. Like, I just switched into my summer uniform. They are camouflage cargo pants and a gray T-shirt. And during the cold months, it is blue jeans and a long sleeve gray T-shirt.
Trendy. That's fashionable. I saw that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I Einstein was accused of wearing the same set of clothes all the time because he didn't like it to clutter his mind, and you know, many people perceive him as a genius. So take that for what
so
you.
So you're Einstein. Okay. You're the Steelers Einstein.
Yeah, or idiot savant, whatever.
Yeah, what's the difference?
What other direction do you want to go here?
Do you have any final thoughts on the schedule before I guess we wrap this up? I mean, I liking it, don't liking it, such a arbitrary term to say, but any gut feeling about the schedule?
I don't like the fact that they're opening up. I don't like seeing them have to do this short week right out of this shoot. And then you know have to play a divisional game against the Bengals, but you know outside of that, look, I mean the Thanksgiving game, you know it kind of affects what you and I will do. Nor I'm with you. I normally like to enjoy my Thanksgiving by watching other teams play and not have to worry about getting ready for a Steelers game. But it is later in the afternoon. It's not really going to affect our two-person Thanksgiving dinner in this house.
Yeah.
You know, as far as that goes, really, you know, I'm not active on Christmas or New Year's or really any day that ends in day. So the rest of it really doesn't bother me.
Is New Year's Day, is that college football? There's bowl games that day. Yeah, there is. That's not fun for the college football world to compete with that.
Probably not on Sunday this year, right?
No, I think because they always have New Year's Day games, don't they? And they were supposed to maybe move that, and then college football didn't want to because of their tradition or something.
Well, I'd find it silly if they kind of trying to compete on the NFL on a Sunday.
Yeah, no, that was the whole story, is that, you know, the people wanted them to move those games to have their own day. I have maybe I'm wrong on this because I'm just trying to think about it right now, but they always play college football on New Year's Day, though, so, and I don't think they're changing that.
Yeah, but they're not, I don't know, well, I'll have to research that. I haven't even thought about that. Two of the first three games on the road. You got a nice little run, kinda, I guess. Let's see, three of your next four prior to the bye are at home against some pretty decent teams. You know, the Chiefs and of course the Patriots. It's always good to get them at home and right before the bye, as we talked about. I mean, I don't know what other way to break this thing down and make it sound interesting.
Yeah, I think I've kind of exhausted all my thoughts on that. But again, you know, little travel, the farthest they ever have to fly is at Miami week six. There are a lot of East Coast playing this year.
Absolutely, and congratulations, Alex. We managed to kill 28 minutes by talking about Steelers' schedule and color rush uniforms.
Hey, before we get paid to keep up.
Shall we move on?
Yes. I think the Steelers have had one visitor since we last talked, right? Sterling Shepard, the wide receiver from Oklahoma. Any thoughts on him?
And he's a guy that first thing I think about when I think of Sterling Shepard is, my God, it seems like he was at Oklahoma for 8 years. The second thing that comes to mind when I think of Sterling Shepard is the feature that ESPN did on him several years ago. Of course, you know, his dad played at OU. If anybody missed that, I put a copy of that video up in that Sterling Shepard visit post that we did. Immediately after it was announced that he was going to do a visit. Great kid. I mean, you talk about a guy that you say, man, that kid sounds like a Steelers player. That's Sterling Shepard. As we've talked a few times this offseason, it's probably not going to be surprising to see the Steelers draft a wide receiver this year, and it's probably not going to be surprising to see one taken in the first four rounds. And it kind of looks by, you know, when you look at the names kind of so far that they've been associated with, or the ones at least that have brought in for pre-draft visits, kind of looks like they're looking for a guy that might can play in the slot and also play outside, a more kind of versatile guy. Obviously, it probably wouldn't be a player that you're looking to get much production out of during rookie season, but I like what I've seen out of Sterling Sharp on tape. I mean, Sterling Shepard. Sterling Sharp. I'm going to do that tons of times. Sterling Shepard on tape.
Well, hopefully maybe they won't draft him, so we won't have to worry about that mistake. Yeah, they brought in two receivers so far, I believe.
Are you not a fan? Is that what you're saying?
No. I like Sterling Shepard. You know, I didn't get a great feel for him. I think I've seen two games on him. I think it was right before the Senior Bowl that I wanted to look at him. And I just didn't get a great feel. He's a shorter guy. If people don't know, he's about 5'10", but I think 194. And man, Dave, he looks smaller than that. Down at the Senior Bowl, they brought him in for one of the press conferences, and he looked like my size. But he's listed bigger. He was a quiet guy, but he spoke well, and you could tell, you know, like you say, he seemed like a good kid. They brought in two receivers so far throughout this pre-draft visit, Farrah Cooper from South Carolina, who is kind of, again, projected as that maybe slot guy. He's a little bit slower, not as quick twitch as Shepard. Shepard's a guy that can make plays in space and can win and get separation. And he gives a lot of effort as a blocker, as being an undersized guy. He's really, really feisty in that tenacity, which you really admire. So maybe you could do that. You could maybe get something out of return value with Cooper or Shepard. You know, I don't know if you saw the post I did, Dave, but, you know, I've been thinking about this for a while now, and I finally got the time to kind of really explore it. The history under Tomlin of choosing offensive players to return punts and kicks since, you know, 2008, every single guy that's had a majority, or really every single guy that's ever done punt return or kick return duty has been an offensive player. The last time it was a defensive player to get more than two or three chances was Allen Rossum in 2007. You know, Tomlin's first year when they traded for Rossum, I think right before the start of the regular season or training camp or sometime around there. So, you know, for whatever reason, you know, I think Tomlin has an affinity for offensive guys returning the ball. And so I think Cooper and Shepard could both do that.
Wouldn't you probably find that to be a fact league-wide, though?
I think generally. You know, I obviously, you know, these things are all kind of relative. But, you know, I looked even just around the AFC North. You know, the Ravens have had Darius Webb do return duty. The Bengals, of course, had, you know, Pac-Man Jones be such a staple on punt returns. You know, so I think generally, yes, the trend is often just because it makes the most sense because those guys in college are going to get the most opportunities. But, you know, I bet if you look across all 32 teams, the quote-unquote drought the Steelers have had with defensive guys is probably close to the longest in the league. I mean, it's been 8 years since I think Joe Burnett had like three kick returns 1 year, and that's the last guy defensive guy has had really any time touching the football.
You know, when you going back to Sterling Shepard and his tape, I like it for what he is. For what and who he is and the type of player that he is. I like him a lot more than Farrell Cooper, I'll tell you that. I watched everything that Draft Breakdown has on him, and that's not fair, and it's a shame that, you know, you see people limit themselves to whatever's up on Draft Breakdown, and I understand why. I mean, it's easy just to watch those cut-ups. But sometimes I wonder if it's just because that's the only film available or if there's a rhyme or reason to why they choose to cut up certain games over other ones, you know. So I guess what I'm trying to say is before I really want to make a kind of a firmer evaluation of Farrell Cooper, I kind of want to watch a little bit more of what's out there and maybe against a little bit stronger competition on top of it. But when you look at a guy like Sterling Shepard, he was targeted 120 times last year, 86 receptions, almost 1,300 yards, 15 yards per catch, 11 touchdowns. He had 5.1 yak. That's pretty decent right there. Had 14 explosive plays, only 3 drops. Would you, I don't want to say Steve Smith-like, but I almost want to say Steve Smith-like.
Yeah.
Fair?
I can definitely see where you're coming from, you know, and I think they both kind of have that really aggressive, I think Steve Smith might be a little bit more so, but I think they have, obviously. Yeah, but no,
right.
I mean, I think they're both kind of aggressive and feisty, and they play a lot bigger than their size, and they're vertical threats, and they're really strong route runners that can do a lot of damage after the catch. I really hadn't thought about it much, Dave, but I can get on board with that comparison.
Instead of Steve Smith Light, or like, maybe I should be saying Steve Smith light.
Oh, very good.
But I mean, he, you know, he does play. I found him to play larger than his size. Mm-hmm. I don't think he plays as, it, to me, he doesn't look like he plays as fast as his time 4.48 speed or whatever. But he does get off the line good, in my opinion. You know, he is what he is arm length wise, which I think somewhere around 30 3/8. He has under 10-inch hands, of course, for a player that size. But I mean, I like him. I'm not, now where do I like him? I think Dane Brugler and several of these other guys have him as a second round guy. I'm not sure I agree with that. I think I have him more as a somewhere in the third round guy. Is that what you see?
Yeah, I think if you look at him as more of just a slot guy, that's going to limit his value. I think there are ways he can win on the outside, but you know, if you're a team that's looking out to play really just in the slot, I think that does limit your value because that means he's not going to get to play in every, you know, personnel grouping. Yeah, I think for any receiver, if you're going to take him, you know, day two or early day three, you want to look for someone that's going to maximize value. You know, you certainly don't want to reach for a receiver because, you know, I think one's going to get drafted, and I think there's a good reason to do that. You know, you don't want to feel obligated to bring one in high, and you don't want to reach for one. So I think if you're looking at the kind of the top end in the middle of the draft, you want to, if someone falls to you and it really maximizes value, that's where you want to take a receiver. Otherwise, I'm okay with taking one like fifth round and back.
Would you take him in the second round?
No, I would not, because again, I don't think that's maximizing the value.
Would you take him in the third round?
Yes, I would, because I think at that point you're getting some much better value out of it. So that's where I would start with Shepard.
Now, Pharaoh Cooper, as I mentioned, another guy. I understand why the Steelers are looking at him. Another, I think, quote unquote, good kid, if you will. The thing that I noticed the most about his game, I thought, was his ability to work back to the football. I think you see, and obviously we don't have all 22 on this, but I think if you really, you know, for those listeners that hear this and want to go look at his tape, go see if you notice whether or not a lot of his catches in the tape that's out there are him working back to the football. That's what I saw in him. He's obviously not a burner. I think that's going to hurt his value. I think a physical enough guy, you know, him and Shepard both obviously could be better in the blocking department. Pharaoh Cooper, not the route runner that Sterling Shepard is, in my opinion. And I know everybody likes these comparisons, and someone reached out to me on Twitter the other day after I had already in my mind formulated this, but this is, you know, I don't use this as a hard comparison. When you turn on the tape on Pharaoh Cooper and you watch him the first couple of plays and how he lines up and his get off the line and all like that, Hines Ward comes to mind immediately.
Whew, that's
But that's where the comparisons end,
yeah.
Is just kind of the posture and the get off.
I actually really have not watched Cooper, so I'm deferring to you on everything. I believe Josh Carney is going to do the report on him, hopefully, you know, by Monday. So I'm interested to learn some more about Cooper. So where would you take him? I mean, let me ask you the question. Where would you start thinking about Pharaoh Cooper?
I don't see, you know, Dane Brugler, I think, once again, has him as a second-round guy. I definitely don't see him as that. I mean, he had a lot of catches, right? But I just think he's going to – I think he needs a lot more work. Now, he did have 113 targets, 66 receptions, almost 1,000 yards. He had 14.7 yards per catch, 8 touchdowns. You talk about Yak. He had 8.0 yak. I didn't see that in the tape that I watched.
Uh-huh.
I don't think. He only had 5 drops. So maybe there's more to Pharaoh Cooper than what I've seen so far. That's why I said kind of, you know, starting this thing off, I kind of want to watch more of what's out there, more than what's out there on Pharaoh Cooper. I view him more as a fourth, maybe a later fourth round guy.
Okay.
Is where I am on him. Now, you said you really haven't watched much of anything on him, right?
Yeah, so I couldn't really give you a good evaluation or projection. Again, I think, you know, if you're before the fifth round, you know, if you're looking rounds, you know, we'll just say 1 through 4. You want someone that's going to really maximize the value, and someone that you really can't ignore if you want to go with the receiver position.
Where do you have? What do you weigh in on Braxton Miller now? It's a while. It's been a long time since we talked about Braxton Miller.
It has. Yeah, his buzz has kind of cooled down a little bit. I really like this guy. He was a personality. I know that's not the most important thing, but it's very infectious. Seems like a great guy. I know there's still a ways to go for him. But man, Dave, just the progress he made to play quarterback, you know, for the years at Ohio State, and then just switch to receiver, you know, not publicly complain about it, take it in stride, perform well, even though, of course, he's going to be a little bit more unrefined than a guy that's been playing receiver, you know, since JV. The progress that he's made and watching him down at the Senior Bowl, and, I mean, if you watch him, you think this guy's been playing for you know, 5-7 years playing the position. So there's some things he has to clean up, some of his steps at the top of his route. But, you know, you're just watching him take coaching, and if he screwed up in one rep, you know, the coach would take him aside or tell him real quick a quick coaching point, and he'd fix it the next time. So I think he's a very receptive person and someone that you can coach up. And, yeah, that's a must for a guy trying to make this transition. So, is he on the card for Pittsburgh? You know, I'm not even sure where he's going to go later round two. You know, I've kind of seen him all over the map. You know, again, I think that personality and the willingness and ability to be coached is going to be something that's going to gravitate, you know, teams to him, and he could go a little higher than what people think. So, again, I think if you're Pittsburgh, you're looking for some great value, either at 58 or 89. I don't know if Miller exactly presents that. If he falls to 89, maybe, probably not at 58. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't think he's going to be in the plans for Pittsburgh, but I do really like Braxton Miller.
He's the type of guy that you see going after their second round pick and before the third?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Again, I really haven't even heard the pulse of Braxton Miller a lot lately. You know, he's cooled down. Like I said, the buzz has kind of cooled down post Senior Bowl. But yeah, I think he's kind of in that, you know, stuck tweener range where, like you said, it's not, the value isn't there at 58, but he's not going to get to you at 89.
Doesn't he scream everything the Steelers might want to take a chance on?
You know, what did he test? Because that's a huge thing for Pittsburgh is how you test, you know, your...
Well, 4.43, right?
Well, he ran a 4.5 flat at the combine. I mean, is that a 4.43? Is that the pro day number?
That's what Dane has down for him here. 1.54 10-yard split, which is incredible get off.
I think those are pro day numbers, though, because the combines are different numbers. They're slower.
Right, right. But, I mean, they're close, though, right?
Well, there's a big difference between a 4.43 and a 4.5. And Ohio State has a really, you know, fast track. Guys fly at the Buckeyes, so.
But he plays faster, I think, than that speed, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's more than enough speed. I don't think it's tremendous. You know, I'm just looking at his athletic measurables from the combine numbers, at least 4.5. Flat in the 40, a 35-inch vert, 10.3 in the broad, you know, pretty, really good shuttle numbers. You know, he didn't make my cut in that criteria. I don't remember why he didn't, though. It kind of looks like he should.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I think that's where I'm going. It might be that 4.50.
Yeah, but I think Josh Doctson had a 4.5. I don't know. I'll have to look back at it. So, yeah, I think he's close in the athletic margin. I think it was actually, Dave, he was 1 inch shy in the vertical, and his 40 time was, like, right on the margin. So I think that's what cost him. So, yeah, the athletic traits there for a bigger frame are there. So I think he generally, you know, he doesn't hit on the nose, but he generally fits what the Steelers like to draft in a receiver.
Boy, when you look at the 4.50 40, and then you look at the 4.07 short shuttle,
mm-hmm.
That's some COD right there.
Isn't that what who was your buddy that said you know, your short shuttle should be like
5 or 0.2? What was
point
it? Was
five,
it? It was 0.5. Yeah. Yeah, if you can get someone that the difference between that was Pat Kerwin.
Mm-hmm.
If you get someone that you subtract 0.5 from their combine time, and that's a short shuttle time. You really have a good athlete. And you know, now he's not there. That's 0.43, but that's just going to be better than most that you're going to find.
Yeah.
His
short shuttle was, I think, tied for the best of the combine. His three cone, I'm looking at it now, was third best. And forget it, it's 201 pounds. That's really impressive.
Let me ask you this. Could you fathom him being the Steelers' third-round pick and not having being a fifth-year senior at Ohio State? The Steelers know all – they know everything about this kid already.
Yeah.
So it makes no sense, and I don't think there's much, if any, any red flags on him. The Steelers have drafted one Ohio State player six or seven drafts or whatnot. How shocked would you be if he was the third-round pick?
Well, I think you need to be a lawyer or on the debate team, because you're about ready to convince me to put Miller in the third round of my mock here, Dave. I'm
thinking about it. That's why I'm going, especially now because of the evidence of Sharp and Pharaoh Cooper. Mm-hmm. Those almost seem like subtle fours.
Yeah, it's just a question again, and I know this is kind of a tired argument, and it's not the best one to make, but is he going to be there at 89? And I'm not – I really don't think that's a golden question.
Yeah, that's a golden – that's the question.
So the question is, is he worth the 58th pick then? That's a lot tougher.
I'm not sure I'd spend a second rounder on him. I think, you know, especially with the needs, mm-hmm. you know, if you look at it that way. Well, I mean, let's look at the guys that are going to go that we know are going to go off the board before him, though. We know Treadwell, we know Coleman, we know Dotson's going to go. Would you think Michael Thomas is going to go?
Yes, him, Will Fuller. Those are all guys that are in first-round conversation. Yep.
What about Rashard Higgins?
Nah, Higgins I don't think is going to go before. I think you could look at, you know, Tyler.
What about Shepard and Cooper? Are they going to go before Braxton Miller?
Shepard, maybe. Cooper, I'd be really surprised. You could throw a Tyler Boyd in there, or Leonte Carew from Rutgers. I'm trying to think if any other name immediately comes to mind.
Kenny Lawler?
I don't think Lawler is going to go. If we're calling Miller kind of a, you know, or late second, early third, I don't know if Lawler is going to go. I think we hit on most of the big names. I mean, we got Boyd, Treadwell. We got like, what, six or seven names there ahead of time, which sounds about right.
And realistically, you see three receivers going in the first round, right? Treadwell, Coleman, Dotson, maybe Michael Thomas.
And if you listen to the scouts and the media, Will Fuller, which I don't really agree with, but that speed is tempting.
So if you, you know, let's say three go in the first, you know, I guess it's possible. I guess what you're getting at is. Even if Braxton Miller was to make it to the Steelers' second-round pick, I really don't like his chances of making it back around to the third.
Yeah, now that we kind of reverse-engineer it, as you like to call it, I really think at least four, maybe even five, are going to go in the first. And I don't see, you know, if we call Miller a top eight receiver in this class, I don't see only three receivers being taken from the end of the first to pick 89. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, so that, you know, that's a good better chance of Shepard being on the board than Miller in the third.
I think a better chance, but still not a great chance to be at 89.
No way you draft Miller in the second round if you're the Steelers, right?
I would not do it. Here's the thing, Dave. You know, I've been thinking about it more. If the Steelers want to get their nose tackle that can play in sub package football, we spent so much time talking about it. You got to do it within the first two rounds, because we've kind of honed in on the three guys that make the most sense: Billings, Butler, and Hargrave. And none of those guys are making it to 89. So if you don't get one within the first two rounds, you know, you're not going to really have a guy, unless maybe there's some developmental guy way late that you just take a flyer on. So if you got to be committed to that if that's the direction you want to go.
Why would Braxton Miller be on the board in the third? Give me a reason why he would.
Lack of experience. 1 year at the position. And that's, you know, he did well in college, but he was just a really good athlete. And played on a strong offense that had a lot of talent around it. And so it's hard to say, you know, okay, 1 year in college, you're ready to go. And it's not even 1 year starting or anything. It's just 1 year honing your craft. And there's such a big mountain to climb, even though he's been refined, you know, considering he's had only that 1 year. That's tough to get on board with, because you know of all the nuances and all the details and all the coverages to read and site adjustments, and, you know, you're tagging this route, and, you know, you're looking at the cornerback's leverage, and if it's an overhang defender, and the safety rotation. I mean, just a million things that go along with the position that you have to get right 100% of the time, because you screw up once, quarterback looks your way, you're on the wrong route, it's a pick six, and you're getting chewed out on the sidelines.
You know, if you would have, prior to Martavis Bryant being suspended, I would have thought, man, there's no way this team's going to draft a wide receiver in the first three or four rounds, but it's more than just possible, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've said it before. You know, if Wheaton walks at the end of this year, you come into 2017 with Antonio Brown, Sammy Coates, and, you know, you don't really know what else you're going to get. And knowing the Steelers love to restock and reload at the position, I've said that phrase 100,000 times, it's important. There's a lot of value there. So I think you're going to see, you could see one, you know, third round. I still think, and I don't want to harp on it because I always kind of tease it every podcast, I think if the board kind of falls in a certain way and you get a Corey Coleman there and there's no one else that's screaming out at you, take this guy. I mean, you know, again, value for Coleman would be huge for me.
Interesting. All right, let's jump to, before we got on this show, we asked Twitter followers to tweet us some questions. Using the hashtag up your podcast.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
See that. That's funny.
From Chad Prince, what player currently on the roster do you feel is going to take a big step forward in 2016?
Ooh, I hope it's Bud Dupree. The way that Tuitt made the big jump, you know, you got to get that pass rush. And I don't know from your outside linebackers where the rest of that pass rush is going to come from. So, man, you know, I know it's a lot of pressure, but I would love to see Dupree get close to double-digit sacks or touch 10 sacks. If you do that, you know, I think you've taken a lot of the worry, at least for this year, off everybody else in terms of getting a consistent pass rush.
Is that your hope answer, or is that who you feel is going to take the biggest step?
Well, I mean, that's part of my hope. I think another one that I think will take, I think Dupree's going to take a step. But, you know, is he going to get that 10 sack or 9 sack? I really can't say for sure. I think another guy that's going to do well is Villanueva. Because Munchak's teacher, Villanueva has that internal drive to get better. And again, I mean, I treated him like a rookie last year, and now that he's gone through, you know, basically three quarters of a season as a starting left tackle in the NFL, a lot of tape to look at, a lot of areas he knows he needs to improve on. You keep Ramon Foster around, and you kind of build up that continuity. I mean, you just see it, you know, as they went on throughout the season, they were communicating better, they were picking up more stunts, their combo blocks were better, where someone would overtake and then someone else would release to the second level. I think, you know, just those repetitions, you go through training camp as, you know, the assumed starting left tackle. I know there'll be kind of the idea of a competition with Ryan Harris, but I think we think Villanueva is going to win it. All those things are just going to just really help stabilize, I think, Villanueva.
Breathe, boy, breathe.
Sorry, I get on a kick. I got allergies, and it's just I'm a mess over here, Dave.
I was going to choose Villanueva as well too as mine. I'm more in the hope category with Bud Dupree, but I think Villanueva has the best chance of taking the biggest step forward.
Let me quickly give you one other name, Ross Cockrell. I mean, this guy got thrown to the fire last year, and I'm not a huge Ross Cockrell fan, but he did well for a guy that was not in preseason, OTAs, training camp. He just, all right, Ross, go play 60% of the time. Okay, and he did okay, and so that's really impressive.
I think he is what he is.
Yeah. But he's going to get better. He's still going into his third year, and I thought he represented himself well for a new system and kind of getting thrown to the wolves.
Yeah, I would buy that. Xavery Goulden writes, how do you guys feel about Sterling Shepard? Xavier, I think we answered that pretty good there. Middle part of the show, so let's not spend some time there. Matt Foreman writes, do you think Miles Jack will drop to 25? Two, if so, do the Steelers take him over a cornerback? I'll start off here. Matt, I'm not convinced the Steelers are going to take a cornerback, even if Miles Jack doesn't drop. I think if they, and I've said this several times, and I'll stick to this rest of the way, if they do take a cornerback in the first round, it's going to be William Jackson III, plain and simple. That's one of several cornerbacks out there. I just don't see them taking a different cornerback other than that. If Miles Jack does drop, and this assumes that the knee and everything is all right, I think this is one of those David DeCastro / Rashad Mendenhall type situations where they would never dream that he would drop, but being as he did, they would end the drop right there. Your thoughts?
Negative zero chance that Miles Jack drops 25. It's just, I mean, he might drop out of the top five and go 9-10 at worst. Zero chance he falls to anywhere close to 25.
But if he were, answer the question.
If he does, then absolutely. And it would be the most shocking thing, I think, in a long time for the draft. And if he does, then that means something happened with that knee. And who knew? So it's not going to happen. Not even going to happen.
From Big Mac 10, if the Steelers had the number one overall pick, who would they select and why? We hate these kind of hypotheticals, but who are you picking number one overall?
That is a good question.
If you're the Steelers.
That is a very good question. I think it comes down to Tunsil or Ramsey. Obviously, if you can get Ramsey a corner or Tunsil as your left tackle, you know, as much as you like Villanueva, they get Tunsil at left tackle would be fantastic. So it's close, but I'll take Tunsil.
You'd take Tunsil? I'd probably take Ramsey
that's
here.
That's fair. I mean, that's fine. I mean, that's cool.
And only because of the state of the roster right now.
Yeah.
I just got done kind of thinking that I think Villanueva will take another step forward and be fine over there. I think I would take a guy – like Jalen Ramsey. Would you be tempted at all by either other two quarterbacks? I mean,
no, not for me. Nope.
Yeah.
I think it's Ramsey, and it's close. I mean, I just think Tunsil is going to be, you know, that stud 10-year starter at left tackle. Ramsey, he might end up playing safety, which I mean, I wouldn't mind one bit. But if you're thinking corner for Ramsey, there's no guarantee he's going to stick there.
From Boston. Dog 69, why not take Spence at 25? Spence in the first, Hargrave in the second. Very well could be. You would think Spence would be one of those guys that even though they know quite a bit about him already during time at Ohio State, you would kind of think that if they had, I just would think they'd bring him in for a pre-draft visit is all. Now that's not one of those things that has to happen by any stretch of imagination. But, Spence sure put on a show at a Senior Bowl. He sure put on a show, at the school that he transferred to. But I said several months ago, I think when David Todd first asked me what position they're going, I said outside linebacker or edge rusher. Who knows? I could fathom Spence being the guy, I guess.
No, I absolutely think it could be. I think if he does fall, and as I've said before, I think it's very possible that he does. He's a Steelers guy because it's such a weak edge class, and he's got that real unique trait of that first step off the edge. So, yeah, I really think if he falls to 25, and let's say Andrew Billings is off the board, I think it's almost an easy decision for Pittsburgh. And again, assuming they're okay with the off the field, which who knows, but if they are, he's the guy at 25, absolutely.
From John Tittler, how many prospects do you have first-round grades for? John, that's such a tough one because a lot of these guys were not even really kind of getting serious about watching film with, at least me. If a lot of these guys early, I obviously haven't spent the film time on because I perceive them as first-round guys and being gone anyway. I would probably say off the top of my head, slam dunk, 20 to 23.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same range. I don't have a number on it. I've seen about 100 guys, but I've missed out on a lot of key first-rounders and fringe guys. So, I'm sorry. Was that John that gave me the question?
I couldn't
give you a great answer for it. About 20 sounds about right.
Yeah, let's see. Davy Jones, what are the three toughest defenses the Steelers will face this season? Real quick, Alex.
Oh, man, I didn't have the schedule pulled up. They caught me.
Cincinnati fair or no? I don't think we can put Cincinnati in there right now with a few of those secondary losses. I don't know.
Yeah.
They replaced a few decent guys there.
No, Reggie Nelson
oh.
is a great for Ben. I think the Chiefs, that defense is always tough, and there was a Bob Sutton, I think the DC, that does a great job. So the Chiefs,
Redskins maybe.
Maybe. I always defer to New England just because I just think their scheme is always strong. So I'll say the Chiefs, the Patriots, and
how about the Jets?
Yeah, I was looking at the Jets too. I'll go with the Jets, and that would come in a three games in 4 weeks kind of thing. So that's not a fun stretch for the Steelers offense.
Yeah, I'll default to that too as well. Too, I think the Bengals are going to be up there, but I don't think they're going to be the unit that they may have been previously. Let's see here. From Deesh, comfortable predicting round one will be one of Jackson, Billings, Spence, Joseph, or Apple. He's saying, are we comfortable saying that one of those five guys will be the pick? I'm still not comfortable, but. Like I said, I don't think Apple's going to be the guy. So those other four, Jackson, Billings, Spence, Joseph, I guess a twist of my arm, I would say, okay, it'll be one of those four guys.
Right. I mean, I could hem-haw around and give you other names that rattle around my mind. But, yeah, I think that's the general consensus, and that's a pretty good way to frame it, Deesh.
Not much time, no time to do anything else. We wanted to kind of talk about the Rams-Titans trade. Maybe David and I will get back. Get to that on
Did
Monday.
Did you want to do a quick shout out for donations? I know we're kind of low on time.
Oh, yeah. I do. If I can find them here real quick.
Yeah, we'll get the Rams-Titans trade, probably Monday. I mean, most people have already kind of thought about the big blockbuster and the implications behind it.
Junior Anderson, Taylor Carpenter, Dennis Diaz, Todd Krasminski, David Benton, Jimmy Fowler, James Waller, Jeff White. I think that's got a lot of the recent donations there. Guys, thank you for that. As always, if you want to donate, go to SteelersDepot.com. Find the donate button in the navigation bar up top there. You can follow me on Twitter, @SteelersDepot. Follow Alex on Twitter, @Alex_Kazora. Follow my co-host, David Todd, @DavidMTodd. Follow the show, @TerriblePodcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back on Monday. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.